At least I should have bothered him just once.
Humans form communities.
And from that diversity comes strength.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
The year is 2024.
The name of the podcast, Babylon 5.
For the first time.
Welcome to Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I am the one who was.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I am the one who will be.
And we're watching Babylon 5 for the first time for you, the one who is.
That's right. Jeff and I are two veteran Star Trek podcasters searching for the important messages that Babylon 5 is trying to tell us in its own unique way.
Yep, we're looking for those Babylon 5 messages, not the Star Trek messages. And since this is not a Star Trek podcast, we've decided that we will play the rule of three. That limits us to only three references total to Star Trek during the entire episode.
That's it. Three.
One of those three. No substitutions, exchanges, or refunds.
And Jeff, what will happen if we do make one of those Star Trek references?
Oh, people are going to hear this great sound.
That's right, because while we are most definitely not a Star Trek podcast, those references could slip in from time to time. And along with our game, The Rule of Three, there is another game we like to play at the end of this episode, or at the end of every episode, to tell you the truth, where we try to guess what next week's episode is going to be about based on title alone, never having read a description, never having seen it first, never really even looking at a thumbnail if we can avoid that. Well, this is the spot, Jeff, where it is time to play.
Time to pay the piper.
And this is where we revisit our prediction to see if we got it right. So, Jeff, what did you say A View from the Gallery was going to be about? And I'll tell you how close you were.
I thought this was going to be a Byron and the Telepaths episode. Watching the day-to-day of the station and really focused on Byron's agenda.
Well, you got day-to-day of the station a little bit. Telepaths were in it. They weren't really watching much. So I'm going to give you 1/10 of a point.
It's very generous of you.
Yes. Oh, I try.
What did you think?
Well, I said that this was going to be Star Trek's Lower Decks. I said that this was going to be Babylon 5's Lower Decks episode, you know, where we're going to catch some of the regular Joes on the station, and they're going to bump into the main characters from time to time as they go about their daily business. And it's just going to be that sort of show. Although I did say we were going to be watching from the top down because it's a view from the gallery. Not like Lower Decks, like where we're looking up. And yeah, that's what I thought it was going to be about. A lot of regular Joes on the thing, maybe some dock workers. I thought there was going to be dock workers.
Much like my predictions in the past, specificity is what hurts you on this one. I'm going to give you 0.75, though, because it really was. It was the average Joes doing their day-to-day.
Yep.
And then you had to dive in and like start trying to tell a story.
Yeah. Well, you know. Sometimes, though, Jeff, my prediction is wrong. But in the details is where it turns out to be right.
So it's very true
for me both ways.
You got to work it and find out what happens. But hey, if you don't know what we're talking about, if you haven't seen this episode for a while, if you've never seen it at all and are listening to us anyway, which is cool. Hey, Brent, why don't you remind us and let us know what A View from the Gallery was all about?
Well, Mac and Bo are two ordinary, everyday blue collar guys on Babylon 5. They're maintenance workers. The real heart and soul of the station. While Sheridan and DeLynn and Lockley and Corwin are running around making decisions and pushing buttons, Bo and Mac are the guys that actually make the buttons do something. Well, one day while they're working, the crew gets word that some scout ships from an unnamed advanced race are on their way to the station to see if Babylon 5 might be ripe for the conquering. Hey, Jeff, haven't we seen this episode already?
I think.
Didn't we do this once or twice? Anyway.
A couple.
Well, Captain Lockley is concerned and wants to get President Sheridan and First Lady DeLynn off the station, you know, just in case stuff goes down and there's not really a Secret Service on the station just yet. But also, we know Sheridan isn't going to want to leave because we know Sheridan pretty well by this point. Well, over a spoo sandwich, Mac and Bo discuss that, you know what? This is actually what they really like about Sheridan. He's not some kind of jerk from the office. He's an in the trenches sort of guy. Well, while they're enjoying their spoo sandwich and trying to figure out what it actually tastes like, there's not much time to finish it because they got to get back to work. Bo heads up to Med Lab to repair a faulty console, and we get a discussion of what it means to save an enemy. Dr. Franklin is all on board about saving an enemy. not because he's a physician and dedicated to the preservation of life, which is totally something Doctors McCoy, Crusher, Bashir, Phlox, and the like would have said. Nope. Dr. Franklin likes to save an enemy because his old man was saved by an enemy doctor, and Franklin just wanted to be like that enemy doctor. Elsewhere on the station, more repairs continue to follow as our main characters work in the background. Finally, the attack on the station actually begins. Mac and Bo wind up hiding out with Byron and the Telepaths, which totally a great band name, by the way. That should be a t-shirt, Jeff. Babylon 5, Bo and the Telepaths, you know.
Holding the mic, ready to go.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Fabio, get on making that t-shirt for us, okay? And while they're hiding out, Byron helps Bo fulfill a lifelong dream by basically mind-walking him into a Star Fury pilot's brain mid-fight. And from there, it's a lot of pew, pew, pew. Eventually, they get out from hiding, and the station is attacked even more. They just happen to be passing by when Sheridan and Delenn, at this moment, are arguing about whether or not they're going to evacuate the station. And Sheridan grabs these two guys and tells them to escort Delenn to an escape pod. Well, Delenn, being the ever-cool cat that she is, actually takes the time to get to know them on their walk and talk. She asks their names. She recognizes them as worker cast. And she totally convinces them to disobey orders from the president. Because, you know, the only one who can actually override the orders of a president is, well, 2/3 of Congress or like half the cabinet or one president's wife. Well, it works out because shortly after the White Star Fleet arrives and Bo and Mac woohoo and celebrate as they look out of a glass window in the floor or something. The White Stars make quick work of the invading ships, leaving Mac and Bo to realize they're going to have to be the ones to clean all of that up. Jeff, what did you think of this episode, A View from the Gallery?
Well, two episodes ago, we asked for a palate cleanser.
Yes.
And here it stands.
I'm not sure here why. Why'd you give yourself a buzz?
Because that's a Star Trek reference.
Here it stands.
We're here to seek out new life. Well, there it sits. A Measure of a Man.
Oh. Wow. That is a deep referential. That's not even a reference. That's an homage. Is what that
is. But no, it's fun. I liked it. But to me, I think that we're, I don't know how much longer we're going to be suffering. Oh, that's a strong word. I don't know how long we're going to be feeling the effects of the cancellation that came up, right? 5-season arc.
The canceled cancellation.
Yeah. Cause right. I mean, yeah, right. 5-season arc canceled. Nope. New life at the last minute. I just wonder like how they can spend this much time on episodes like this and Paragon of Animals that are ripped from season 1, you know, and like, here's your thing of the week and whatever, with a couple little seeds, it'll probably grow into something.
We have 18 stories with these guys left. And this is, or at this point, 19 stories with these guys left. And this is what you choose to spend one of them on.
It was fun. It was cool. I love this trope, right? Like all the episodes that do, it's great. It's great.
Yeah. Lower Decks is one of the best episodes of Next Generation.
It's fantastic.
They made an entire series based off of Lower Decks.
Yeah. All in all, I love some of the leadership lessons in this one, but they're the same kind of leadership lessons that this episode in other series also have. It was kind of fun. That's my first thought on this one. What about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a fine episode. I did not hate this episode by any stretch of the imagination. I just didn't need it. It's fun. Maybe even it's a little bit of a feel-good episode, but that's really about it. Jeff, I'm going to spoil the rest of this episode for all of our listeners out there.
Already?
Yeah. I have one note. That's it.
Really?
One. Do you know the last time this happened where I went into an episode with one note? Do you know what episode that was?
Was that the King Arthur episode?
Yes, Late Delivery from Avalon. Here's the difference, though, for me with this one and Late Delivery from Avalon. Late Delivery pissed me off. This one didn't piss me off. Like, but people hear me. I like this episode. Late Delivery from Avalon, I wanted to like that episode. It started off so well and then crashed and burned into really an emotional thing. Maybe I'll appreciate it much more on the second watch. But on this watch through, I was so disappointed with where it went because I loved the idea of what they started with. And then when we got the reality, it just, oh my gosh, it felt like a J.J. Abrams show all over again. This one didn't do that. This one was exactly what I thought it would be, front to end or front to back. And it didn't make me mad. I would absolutely watch this one again. But as far as analyzing it and discussing it for 30, 45 minutes here on a podcast, Jeff, I'm afraid we're going to come up short this week, buddy. Unless you got a bunch of stuff and you're going to carry this. I just don't have it.
I have 9 notes on this one, but a lot of them are observations, right? Let me read one.
Okay, you do an observation. I'm going to react. Okay.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. Here we go. Let's see. They have the newer Star Furies now, along with the classic Star Furies.
Yep, that happened.
The station got rocked.
Yep, that happened.
Byron is no joke. He's really powerful.
Yep, that happened.
Okay, those are my observations. That's like half of my notes right there. I got a couple more that dive in a little bit, so I do have some stuff okay. We can dive
Mine
into.
Mine doesn't really
let's start with you
much, but go ahead.
Let's start with you. Okay. Let's go into yours
first. Spoo! What does Spoo actually taste like? And don't say chicken.
Bravari.
Is that while it's still in the bottle or when it's on the floor?
They scoop it up. Maybe Spoo is just like fermented and cultured Bravari.
I don't know. The fact it was on a sandwich I thought was really interesting because, Jeff, two weeks ago, I saw a clip from, it was either He-Man or She-Ra, but it was Skeletor. The clip was of Skeletor, and I know he was in both shows, right? This is from the 80s, right? Which we know JMS was writing on the show back then. But this person like brought Skeletor a bowl of Spoo.
Really?
And Skeletor's like, I hate Spoo. Spoo's awful. And so to see it pop up here again, it's fun.
Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5first. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5first. We can't wait to see you there. I feel like the sandwich though is more of a tofu sort of a thing. It just looked like a slice right out of the container of tofu.
It was something else. I kind of wonder what it actually tastes like. It's got to be at least edible. If it's not delectable, it's at least edible. So
maybe it's like a fancy cheese, right? Or the Centauri who have a more refined palate are like this. But when Mac is eating it and he's had it a little bit and he knows he's shelled out some serious money, he's kind of like, yeah, it's all right. But Bo is just like, this tastes like gym socks. I don't know why you would eat this.
There are delicacies in this world where I feel like that. Things that are supposed to be real expensive. And I'm like, why are you eating this crap? This is awful. You know, frankly, I feel that way about most alcohol.
Really?
The amount of money that people pay for alcohol to drink it and the response is, burns! Like, for that response, and you're going to pay that much money for it? I'm not a teetotaler, just so people know. And people like their alcohol. Awesome. More power to you. That's just Brent's opinion. I like my drinks a little cheaper and to taste a little better. For those out there wondering, fruity-flavored drinks are delicious.
I was just going to ask, are you an umbrella kind of guy, pineapple?
I am a margarita man, I will tell you that. Okay. I love me a really good margarita, but it's not a strong, if the tequila is overriding in a margarita, I'm out. You know what that, it's like when you drink a soda and the mix is off and you just get like all carbonation. That's what a margarita with too much tequila to me is like. It's like, ugh.
I think tequila is gross. I'm a bourbon scotch guy. I love a good bourbon.
Yeah.
I'll usually take the scotch with a little bit of water, and I'll usually take the bourbon on the rocks.
Maybe
some ginger beer in there. I like that quite a bit, but I had to like train myself to like and appreciate it. Cause at first it was just like, hey, let me try this thing. Oh my God, it tastes like fire. Who would drink this?
As a native born Kentuckian, I have a healthy respect for bourbon.
So I had a theory 2 weeks ago,
yep.
3 weeks ago about Captain Lockley.
Who, by the way, we saw her in the first episode. We didn't see her at all in the second episode. Did we see her last week?
Nope.
Okay, so 4 episodes in, we've only seen her half the episodes.
So far.
Main character, she is not. Okay, got it.
Yeah, one of the sidekicks. She's a Lanier. She's a Veer.
Oh, did we replace Lanier with her?
Oh.
I miss Lanier. I want Lanier back.
I had this whole theory about how she was going to kind of be a bad guy, like be a villain and be anti-Sheridan, all these things. And at the end, near the end, they left a little of that sort of open when they talked about, have you heard the rumors about the new captain? And Bo was like, hey, there was people who were fighting because they were told to fight, and then there were people who were fighting because they wanted to fight. And the rumor is Lockley's one of those. But first thing Lockley does after Corwin kind of gives her the breakdown is she's like, we need a life pod. We need the president and the first lady set up to go. If she was anti-Sheridan and wanted him dead, she's at least doing her job. So a good chunk of my theory, I think, got killed.
Lockley strikes me as a person who was definitely on Clark's side, but because she is sworn to obey the orders of the president of Earth Force, and while she may have personally thought that he should have been the president and might have agreed with the policies and those sorts of things, I also think she would have obeyed the orders of President Santiago, or she did obey the orders of President Santiago.
Yeah.
Or if President Santiago's opponents had won who were wildly on the other side, I think she would have obeyed orders more than went looking for a fight and more than lining up with her own personal political beliefs.
I liked how she just pulled her hair back into a ponytail. Like she didn't, and they did this with Ivanova also a couple times where it's like, we're not going to stop and go get beautiful. I got woke up and pulled into the CNC. This is who, that, and you're lucky I showed up dressed, which Ivanova didn't do one time, you know, in her dream. But I liked that little touch. I liked Franklin in this one. There was a moment where I feel like he fought old Franklin in his brain. Mm. When Bo was just like, well, why would you help these people? You know, and he stops and he's like, why would I do that? And like in that moment, old Franklin is like, shut this guy down. Tell him how wrong he is. But the new Franklin was like, no, I'm going to open up. I'm going to be a little vulnerable here. Actually, like have a conversation with this guy.
The spot where he was talking about his dad, that event where he was rescued by an enemy doctor or saved by an enemy doctor. That happened way before Gropos.
Way before. Happened way before the Minbari War. Happened before the Dilgar War.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that was his inspiration for becoming a doctor. Like where he wasn't referencing something that happened during Gropos. Because I remember his dad, I was like, I didn't think his dad got captured during Gropos. Just clarifying. Well, with that, just with Franklin. I do feel like that would have been really good information in the episode Gropos.
Oh, yeah.
Gropos was an episode that was designed to humanize Dr. Franklin, right? It was designed to sympathize us with Dr. Franklin quite a bit. That bit of information, more than just, hey, my dad and I are fighting, but actually, no, dad, I became a doctor because of this thing that happened to you. Like, his dad is still his inspiration. And I just think it would have been better served to be put there because it does humanize Franklin quite a bit. Now he still has some questionable moral standards, but
Gropos did not. It was not successful. And I mean, Gropos' big win for me was it humanized and made me care about Kefir.
Yeah.
For eight minutes, you know, but it didn't do anything to make me. In fact, I think it pushed me back against Franklin even more. Cause like, oh my God. And of course he's got this family and of course it's just, but yeah, this would have made a difference, I think.
Yeah,
literally my last note, well, I have two notes that I'll touch on, but one more of a reference of substance. The one before, as I said, Byron's no joke. Like he's really powerful. He said a thing in this one that he also said to Lita last week that I think is going to turn into something when Bo was like, I really wonder, you know, what it's like to be out there piloting one of those star theories, doing this stuff. And he asked him, is that very important to you to know that? And he asked Leeta, you know, about the people helping with Garibaldi stuff. Is that very important to you? And once they said, yes, it was, he delivered. And then we got a Londo and Jakar scene that ended hilariously.
Yeah. A properly placed Londo and Jakar scene after what happened in the Very Long Night of Londo and Millard.
They walked away. How long have those two been married? Ha ha ha. But as a great observation Jakar made, you know, they're talking about their childhoods, and Jakar observed that Londo never grew up. He just grew old.
You know what it made me, what it reminded me of? The Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say it was Mighty Ducks. Maybe it wasn't the Mighty Ducks. I don't know. It was an episode where somebody was talking to somebody else who was basically Big Mr. Grumpy Puss. He was like, didn't you ever want this when you were a kid? No, I was never a kid. I was just this. Maybe that wasn't Mighty Ducks. Maybe that was something else. Whatever. Somebody out there knows what I'm talking about.
And I do think if you're going to talk about anyone who was never a kid, like, that's Emilio.
Right. Emilio!
Emilio! That's a reference a lot of people got.
I hope so, because if you didn't.
Yeah, you're missing out. You are missing out.
Mighty Ducks, man! Emilio Estevez!
I think we're at that. Are we there already?
You know what? We're at the 27-minute mark, which, you remember that episode Infection? This was the mark at Infection where the whole thing flipped and turned into a really good episode. So let's go, Jeff.
Let's make it happen. Brent, we've reached the part of the show where we boil this all down, see if the episode has any deep morals or messages to it. Maybe it's holding up a mirror to society or giving us hope that life will be better in the future. And at the same time, we also see how much does it deliver that message in its own unique Babylon 5 way. You're going to do that by rating the episode on a scale of 0 to 5 white stars to see how strong the message is and just how Babylon 5 it was delivered. So what do you got for us?
So Jeff, this section is always real interesting to me because you can watch just about anything and pull a message from it.
Yep.
This is what I got out of it. This is, you can do that with anything. Whether that piece of art intended for that to be a message or not, you can pull a life lesson. You can pull stuff like that out of it. That is not necessarily the type of message we're looking for here. We're not just looking for anything that you can pull out of it. You mentioned earlier, there's some really cool leadership stuff you can pull out of this. I think there's a ton of great leadership stuff. This, Jeff, would be an episode that would be rife for a Starfleet Leadership Academy treatment.
Totally.
It would. Which, by the way, if you guys don't know what that is, please go check out Jeff's other podcast, his actual Star Trek podcast, the Starfleet Leadership Academy, and you will be blessed. Don't you hit that buzzer. I am past that point. So that being said, I want to dive into one of those leadership things because I do think that there is actually that. Here's how we define it, right? A deep, deep moral message, a mirror to society, or hope that things are going to get better in the future. Are we tackling an issue of our day? Are we really hitting up against a social issue? Or are we talking about the fact that mankind can just be better? I don't think any message that I pull can really catch that criteria, except for possibly this, but let's dive into it. There's a moment in this episode when Delenn takes a moment and asks the guys their name. She realizes in that moment that they're worker caste and that she, John, Corwin, Garibaldi, Lockley, all of them, that everything that they're doing is actually for them. This is a callback to when they reinstituted the Great Council and she doubled the amount of worker caste by lessening the other two. She says, these are the guys we're actually serving. We exist to serve them. They are the ones who actually make things go. And in that moment, Delenn seems to recognize that. She takes it to heart, and later on, she honors them by remembering their name. That right there, Jeff, is a huge leadership lesson that I'm sure you could dive into. Those of you who are listening to the audio podcast later, not the video podcast on YouTube, Jeff is just nodding his head up and down going, oh, yeah, like Kool-Aid Man.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
It's massive.
Absolutely. But is that a deep moral message? No. Is it a mirror to society? Not really. Is it giving us hope for the future? No. However, I do think it reminds us, and I think it reinforces us, and I think it reinforces for us something that Babylon 5 has already talked about, which is the idea of recognizing the little guys and recognizing who it is that government works for. If I were to talk about that, that's where I would say that this goes. It's not a deep moral message. Is it the mirror to society? I would say yes, in that it's kind of the way it should be, in that so many times our government specifically, because we're dealing with a president here and a first lady and commander of the station, which is still government, right? Let's call the commander of the station the Speaker of the House, right? Like, that's where we are. We're physically running stuff. They work to serve us, the people who actually make things run. It's not the bosses. It's not the bigwigs. We don't live to serve them. In a moment when these men were supposed to be serving the president's wife, or serving the president himself by getting his wife off the station, they stop to remind us that it's actually them who serve us. And we would all do well to remember and respect that. Now, that in and of itself, Jeff, is a leadership lesson you can apply to businesses or leadership situations anywhere. However, that is the best thing I can pull out of this episode as far as any sort of a White Star, Delta, Star Fury, anything out of this whole episode, is just a reminder, a view that those people exist to serve us, and you would do well to remember their names. I'm going to give this one White Star.
It's a huge message. And you're right. I could do an entire episode of the Starfleet Leadership Academy on that alone.
Absolutely.
As a leader, a person in a job where I'm actively leading many people, one of the most powerful things I can possibly do is walk up to a person who's showing up and doing their job and say, "Hey, Drew, how's it going? Tell me about this thing in your life that you've shared with me before."
Yeah.
And that 5-minute conversation, I have changed dude's life. Not because being a leader makes you anything special or anything like that, but just by virtue of your position and the way our society holds those positions and those titles in a, you know, in a way, there's power in that recognition.
There's a reason why, Jeff, one of the things that I love about this show, and you and I say this all the time, you and I are just two knuckleheads who happen to have microphones and access to a computer. It's why I try to take time to get to know the people that listen to this show, because we exist for them, not them for us, you know? And I think of our friends, Alyssa and Lynn and Chris, and I'm going to stop naming names because I'm going to not name somebody, then they're going to get offended. But,
well, we would be remiss if we didn't specifically name Nia, because all of this, we all exist because Nia allows it and makes it so.
Yes, no, absolutely. Nia is one for sure. Nikoko, I think, is a name on YouTube. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly, but anyway, all of you guys out there, like when Jeff and I, you guys don't understand the amount of comments between podcasts, YouTube, Twitter, Patreon, and Discord that Jeff and I are in. And Jeff and I make a legit effort to comment on, to respond and have those conversations, because we want to recognize and respect our listeners out there who take the time to comment and say, you know, we can't get to everybody every single week. It's impossible.
But I think what I got out of this one, in addition to that, was near the end where Mac is kind of complaining a little bit, right? So the day is saved, everything's awesome. And he's like, yep. So they go off, they get to do all that, they're celebrated, they're going to get all the glory. And then they turn the corner and there's just this whole landing bay filled with dead bodies.
Mm, yeah.
Franklin's going body to body, kind of, you know, pulling the blanket over their face. And I think that perspective of the grass is not always greener on the other side. Yeah, you're the person who has to go to Brown Sector and do the work in Brown Sector, and that's awful. You're the one who has to come in during a battle and get the secondary system online because a bug that made it through, you know, the food stuff a year ago got through everything. And those are not what we would consider glorious jobs. But I think without those jobs, nothing else can happen. And sure, that Star Fury pilot, going to be celebrated, gets medals, people know their name, you know, whatever. If you're Marcus, people know your name and they talk about you. Yeah, there's never going to be a statue for Bo or Mac, but that doesn't mean they're not equally as important. And it's a question of the price you pay, the value you offer, and all of those pieces. And that price you pay has been a theme throughout Babylon 5. We talked about it in season 4 a lot in terms of power, the cost, the price of power. We see it again here. Yeah, you're going to get glory for these things. Also, you died. Mm. And trading that off. That last scene, it hit me especially hard. Like, I saw it on my first watch through, but when I watched it the second time, it really hit where I'm just like, oh, this is the message. That just because you're worker caste or whatever doesn't mean you're any less important, less critical, less vital. In fact, I would go a step further. The show didn't say this, but I'll say it. Maybe we should be celebrating those people. Maybe that team who shows up every Friday morning outside my house at 6:42 a.m., to pick up my garbage.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be celebrating them a whole lot more, because I don't know what I would do without them. So that's kind of what I got out of this one.
I have said multiple times that I run in a lot of circles that deal with a lot of physicians, specifically physicians. One thing we love to celebrate in this country are our nurses, the ones that do the work, that get the job done. And if anybody is confused about any sort of division of labor, typically within the medical community, the doctor goes in, the doctor makes decisions, the doctor writes orders, and then the doctor leaves and the nurse executes the orders. That's at a very base level, that's the division of labor there. The nurses 1000% deserve to be celebrated and honored for the work they do, because a lot of times it is, it's not glorious. For sure. From the physician side of it, though, the physicians are the ones who are making the decisions. The physicians are the ones who are making life and death decisions every day. Life and death. That is the importance. That is the weight of what they are making. And that final scene reminded me of that idea where, yes, what Mac and Bo do every day, they're the ones that make, when Corwin pushes that button, they're the one that makes that button do something. It is a 100%, that is something that needs to be done, and that should be celebrated, and that should be honored. However, the weight and gravity of those who make decisions, particularly life and death decisions, they have to live with those decisions and the results of those decisions as well, as we saw on full display in that final shot of the episode. That takes nothing away from the nurses. That takes nothing away from the worker cast. That takes nothing away from Bo and Mac. It also highlights the gravity of the leadership role, of that decision-making role, and what that can actually mean. It's a both. It's a both. It's not either one. It's a both.
It's an all, really. Like, everything that people do matters.
You know, there's a great, it's one of my favorite pieces out there. It's like, you know, for a body, not every body part can be the head. Some parts need to be a hand. Some parts need to be a foot. And a foot doesn't say, why am I the lowly foot? Why am I the one that everybody steps on? What happens if we don't have feet? It's a necessary part.
Yeah. You know what part I don't want to be, but I'm thankful for every day, is the colon. I would not want to be a colon, but man, thank God it's there doing its job.
Exactly. And when it's not doing its job, bad stuff happens. We're all part, you know, it's you're all a part of the body, and we can't all be the head. Well, Jeff, with that, you know what else we do on these episodes? We are creating a list, an accurate list, a completely 100% definitively correct list, ranking the episodes of season 5 of Babylon 5. Jeff, your turn is to place this particular episode in its spot. Our top 3 episodes, because that's all we really have so far, are number 1, The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari, number 2, No Compromises, and number 3, Paragon of Animals. Jeff, where do you place this one of You from the Gallery?
This one is not hard for me. The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari, I think, will stay in that top spot. That is the episode to beat, right? Like, it's there until something comes along. I will not be surprised if we get to the end of this season and it is in the top 2 or 3 spots at the very end. No Compromises, great season opener. It's fun. I think it was your favorite season opener so far.
Yep.
My second or third, but it's still great. Great season opener. Paragon of Animals, not a fantastic episode. Not bad, not fantastic. So I take this one and I ask myself, which one would I watch again? And it's this one. So this is going to be our new number 3.
You could have placed this at 3 or 4, and I couldn't have argued with you. Like, you would have been right either way. But I happen to agree with this particular nuance. I would rather watch this one over Paragon of Animals again. So I concur, sir.
Excellent. Well, that's it for A View from the Gallery. Next week, we're going to be watching Learning Curve for the first time. We've never seen these episodes before. We don't look at thumbnails as much as we can avoid it. We don't look at synopses, descriptions, or anything. And the fun prediction game we like to play that we eventually next week will call
Time to Pay the Piper
is guessing and predicting what the next episode will be about based on the title alone. So, Brent, you get to go first. What do you think Learning Curve is going to be about?
I think this is one of those nail on the head type episodes. I'm going to go with Lockley specifically, although everything I'm about to say could be Sheridan as well. Could be Garibaldi, frankly. What I'm saying is, or maybe it's all three of them. We've got people, even Delenn. All of our people, with the exception of Londo and Jakar, maybe even Jakar, they all have new jobs this season. They're all in new roles. And there's a learning curve that comes with that kind of stuff where you're not doing your job very well. Your job is very difficult. And there's a learning curve. And as you learn it while you're on the job, you get better at it. And it doesn't become as hard. I think this is a job. I think this is an episode about that. I think we're going to stay in these sort of mundane, episodic type things for a while, you know? And I think that's it. Lockley's trying to get a handle on running Babylon 5. That's hard. Sheridan's trying to be president. Garibaldi's trying to do this covert operations thing, whatever that's going on. Jakar's trying to write constitutions and be the Secretary of State, which is seems like what he's trying to do. Londo's being Londo. I don't know. Londo's going to go be emperor. It's something. Oh, we haven't had Londo go be an emperor yet. That's supposed to happen early this year. So that's my guess. Jeff, what do you got?
Well, you can get my whole guess on this one in the 22nd episode of the Starfleet Leadership Academy with the same name, Learning Curve. Mm. Has nothing to do with this one, though. That's a whole different episode. I am really almost beat for beat the same for you. What I think this one is going to be, it's going to be focused on Lockley learning the station, but I think it's going to be really focused on the division of duties, or kind of the division of stuff between her and Sheridan. And it's going to start kind of patching that road together for their conflict, and where we really get some more information about her role in the Earth Civil War.
All right.
We'll find out right here next week. Thank you everybody so much for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. Leave us a rating and a review, and please share this podcast with someone who either already loves Babylon 5 or is just waiting to fall in love with this incredible series. So until next time.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, man. What's up?
So what did you think of the edit I had this week for the print watches? Because this was a tough one.
I think it was kind of like Spoo, to be honest.
Spoo.
Yeah, you know, tastes like chicken.
Get the hell out of here.
Initiating getting the hell out of here maneuver.
We're not some deep space franchise. This station is about something.